Great. Okay, everybody, welcome to A Course in Miracles. And we got a good night for you as usual, because this fantastic book has... Oh, by the way, everybody, Don Wagner is joining us. And he is a longtime course student who's suddenly coming back to it. And he's found our meetings through Luann. And welcome, Don Wagner.
Thank you.
Welcome, Don.
Thank you.
He's in San Jose, I believe.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so, you know.
By the way, he lives real close to the church that you used to have your Wednesday night meetings in.
Oh, yeah, very well. Yeah. Okay, so, now, there is a, oh, hi, Marion.
Hello.
There is a truth that is too simple to be believed that we are working with A Course in Miracles. You see, if you've got a very, very gradual spiritual path, it's quite understandable and it's believable and it makes you feel good from the outset and it's just what you thought it was. That's not A Course in Miracles. This is a radical path to awakening. Radical, the word just means goes to the root. A radical is a root. We're going right to the root of your existence. I mean, I know for most of you, you're not really interested in wasting time if it's, hey, hi, Donna.
Hi, Donna.
If you didn't have to, you wouldn't take any more time than needed. You might choose not to waste any time. A Course in Miracles talks about that too. Because time is part of your addiction and fixation. And it's also one of the things that you've tried to create. You're working with time. You've not been successful. It's only served to make you feel separate. But it's nonetheless... There is a challenge before you now. You feel it. Everybody feels it, but I'm not sure you've thought through it completely. That's what A Course in Miracles is for. But there is this specific, steep challenge. It's too simple to believe, and it's also, as a radical path, for most people... It's too high of a jump to make all at once and land on your feet. We're talking about what is the change of mind that enables your spiritual awakening. Obviously, it's something that's just out of your grasp. Otherwise, none of this discussion would be interesting and this book would be passé. However, the book is the invitation. The book is a bridge to help you with this very, very simple concept that's just too simple to be believed. It's too radical to be accepted. It's too steep to climb for most people. But it's really simple. It's really simple. You know. Even though you may not have, you know, the exact phrasing of what I'm about to spit out, everybody here knows from reading A Course in Miracles and the authority with which the book is written that you are fully capable somehow, some way, that the truth of you has gone untouched, unchanged, while you've been busy dreaming of exile, as the Course puts it. So you all know this. My job, and A Course in Miracles' job tonight, and every night really, is to bring you face to face with this very simple truth. And who knows? If you haven't already climbed up this step, tonight could be the night If you're not ready just now, you will be more ready the next time you allow yourself the possibility of the biggest miracle of all, a big shift in perception. So the section that we're studying tonight, as I've said each week, it has many levels of consciousness invited to study on that same page. And this is another example tonight we're working with. So let's just sit first with a simple question and then we'll dig in. So my question to you, I want you to go along with this willfully and just try it out as best you can. Try to own these words. Try these on for size and let yourself go as deeply as you can. Let your Holy Spirit walk you through to whatever door may be waiting. And my invitation to you is, what would it be like right now to realize that it is simply your personal mind that blocks you from perfect love? Right now. Not later. Not after you finish the workbook the sixth time. Not after you do whatever meditation or spiritual teacher or ayahuasca or die and go to heaven. No. Nothing in the future. For the next 5 minutes, I would like you just to consider becoming very present and aware. What if it was your exact personal mind, the one you are using tonight, right now, that was the block to your awareness of eternity? Just asking you to set aside all of your ideas and doubts and words and everything else just for a couple of minutes and say, oh, okay, it's me. It's my mind and a bunch of habitual choices I've been chasing. My own choices at a fundamental level I've forgotten about. Oh, it's me. I'm telling you, it's you. Allow this in. Let it go past all types of doubt or questioning just for a moment. Hey, it's you. Seek no further than this very instant in your very mind. Come to rest in this very moment and discover yourself complete, not lacking anything. A moment before, you were just absolutely fixated on separate things outside you for your whole life. But now you've arrived here. Welcome to now. You feel only one thing possible, and it's obvious. And what you feel is you, not a victim. Present and whole, and always just a little curious, like a child. Like a child who's been playing a very small game, trying to be alone against all odds of eternity and infinity and all the extensions of God to which you've closed your mind so that you can play this little person in a body on earth. It's you. It's you. There you are. Just rest. Did you notice while you're resting that your body is kind of waiting for you? It doesn't know what to do. It never has. It's just a robot waiting for you. It's never had an opinion. It's never even felt anything. You did all of that in your game of separation and victimhood. But now, just for a moment, you just look at the machine a bit and say, oh yeah. As you come more into the present moment, notice your body just waiting for you. Notice how it, sitting there, laying there, it would wait forever. You would have to break the stillness. The body doesn't have such a motive or any motive. It never did. Here you are. And finally, just take this next minute or two. See what pops up. What if you were suddenly made aware right now that this was indeed a hallucination, that this was actually a made-up artifice? You don't live in a body. Your name is not your name. You've been playing with this thing and time and space and all these different faces, and that all of the beautiful energy behind each expression that you tried to curl up into a separate item, that energy is back safely waiting in what we would call heaven for its joy and happiness and ability to share freely, not with competition like we have down here inside this dream. So tell me, take the next minute or two to feel your way through it. What if you did come into a sudden realization that this is indeed an hallucination, a dream, and the real you is much, much, much bigger and freer and complete, knows of love, knows it's an extension of love, knows how to extend love, knows how to play with joy instead of play with fear like you do in the dream. What if you knew all this was made up? There really aren't words. If you touch that moment, and if you didn't touch that moment, there is a moment waiting for you. A really simple, dawning moment of empowerment and simplicity and eternity, not emptiness. This world being an exact illusion, a hallucination, this is what emptiness is. You've had it all backwards. You know what I mean if you touch that moment. So, rather than do our normal round robin, let's jump in and let's go look at where the Course talks about this for a paragraph. Page 443 in the text. You know, there's places in this book where Jesus just goes for it. He says, wait a minute, why don't I just tell you? Maybe you are ready. And he just tells you. And then he decides, for most people, you're not ready. And he goes back down to the average consciousness discussion of a course. But every once in a while, he goes up. And if you're ready, he just tells you throughout the book. I think there's some number of levels of consciousness teaching in here. Maybe 7. I made that number up, but there's more than one. So let's just go look and see if the meditation that I asked you to do is supported by A Course in Miracles.
Andrew?
Yeah.
Page 448, not 443.
I know 448 is where we are focusing, but I'd like you to go to page 443 to see a particular paragraph, and I welcome the help, believe me, every time. Please help. But in this case, we're going to 443. It's a reading we did before we started this section. You know, this is one that just gets glossed over because it doesn't seem serious enough. It doesn't even seem practical enough to work with. So you just read the next paragraph. But if you got anywhere near the experience of eternity during the meditation, this will make a lot of sense to you. Look at paragraph 7.
This chapter 21?
Right, it's chapter 20, actually. Section 8, the vision of sinlessness. And in the Course in Miracles, sin, is, you could put in the word separation. So this section might be titled the vision of not, you know, impossible separation. And so we're going to look at paragraph 7, which starts with the word judgment is but a toy. And it's, Don doesn't have numbered paragraphs. Luann, I got your mute. Would you please read for us carefully paragraph 7?
It's funny because the first line of the first place I went to in this meditation. Judgment is but a toy, a whim, the senseless means to play the idle game of death in your imagination.
Wait. Did she read that right? Did you hear that? Jesus put, he just threw the word death in there. As if it was something normal and optional. Did you see that? No kidding. This is a different level of discussion, you know? Like I say, you're going to blow right past this, you know, but one day it'll mean everything to you, of course. Maybe today the day. So, Luann, read that again because I just want to make sure you read it right. You did, but I just want to hear it again.
Judgment is but a toy, a whim, a senseless means to play the idle game of death in your imagination. But vision sets all things right, bringing them gently within the kindly sway of heaven's laws. What if you recognize this world is an hallucination? What if you really understood you made it up? What if you realize that those who seem to walk about in it to sin and die, attack and murder, and destroy themselves are in it?
Are wholly unreal.
Made it up.
Yeah.
What if you recognize this world as a hallucination? What if you really understood you made it up? What if you realize that those who seem to walk about in it, who sin and die, attack and murder, and destroy themselves are wholly unreal? Would you have faith in what you see if you accepted this? And would you see it?
And would you see it? Would you see what?
What we made up.
And what is he saying in particular that you made up?
That we are alive in order to die.
This is some pretty graphic stuff here. He's saying there's people that walk around to sin. That means do the wrong thing, be very different from you and challenge your peace of mind, to do things you don't agree with and in fact you think are harmful, and you might have done a few things that are harmful in your estimation, so you're one of them. Can't escape it now, it's done. And according to the ego, what you've done for keeps. Some people are attracted to some Eastern religions that talk about karma, and they say, well, you do your due diligence and you can pay it off. You don't have a choice because the balancing hand of karma will punch you once for every time you've punched. That the universe is only fair And that's what makes it kind, because it will attack you back for each time you've attacked somebody else. What a load of ego, guilt, and attack is that? I get the sensitivity to it. I get the balance and fairness. But you got to look, step back and look and say, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, Course does. It doesn't use the word karma, but it does hit the topic. Course in Miracles, if you want to talk about karma, you better get present. Because in A Course in Miracles, there's no time, see? At the level of which you think karma would be acting, you'd have to A Course in Miracles perspective, you have to erase this dream of time. And so if there were punishment meted out, if there were somehow recompense for punishment, it would all happen right now, wouldn't it?
Do it to ourselves.
Instantly? In truth. In the dream, we did it to ourselves and we'll have to pay for it later. That's a discussion of time. You have to recognize that this is part of the radical nature, curative nature of A Course in Miracles, that it will help you come out of time. Help you come out of time. Your spirit is eternal. Your true being, what you actually are, is a free, free thing that is not bound to time. It can play with time, and you do, obviously, much as you like. But it's just not true. And so what we're doing is we're unwinding the effect of your addiction, and in this, for this moment, your addiction to time being so real. Hold your finger here. We're coming right back. But it's time once again to look at Miracle Principle 13, where he just kind of, right in the beginning, he says, well, we're going to cover this. He says, we're going to unscrew what you have screwed. In not so many words, of course.
When I first started your meditation, the first thing I thought would be it would be such a relief if I just let my mind not do what it does, which is judge all the time. Every time I turn around, I'm judging. And
yeah.
I keep thinking it's in cahoots with my ego.
What a relief.
And it felt like such a relief. And then I realized, and I'm the one that lets it do that.
Bad a girl. That's the whole exercise right there. Look at Miracle Principle 13 real quick. Jacqueline, will you read that for us?
Miracles are both beginnings and endings, and so they alter the temporal order. They're always affirmations of rebirth, which seem to go back, but really go forward. They undo the past and the present, and thus release the future.
Do you realize that all fear is of the future? Wait, not some. All. You're not afraid of your current moment. That's practically done. You got that handled. It's the next moment that's the problem. Or next week. That's what you're concerned about. That's your fear. What if you actually only live in the present moment like you are right now? You could not be afraid. I mean, right now. Right? You couldn't have time to be afraid because you have stepped out of time.
And you couldn't judge yourself for your judgments.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, Andrew.
Yeah.
What if, in my case, my heart right now is kind of, I have what I would call anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It's not present. That certainly isn't being present.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about some unconscious thing, I think.
Anxiety and fear and any type of an urgent emotion. If you feel these things, you have instructed your body to allow these things to progress, and then you judge the meaning of what you're feeling, thereby inserting an additional command to keep it up. And you might ask yourself mid-anxiety, first pang, oh my God, what does this mean? And then you've come up with a reason with your creative mind, thereby keeping the circle going and maybe even amplifying it. Instructing the body to emit a little more cortisol, a little more epinephrine, a little more something else that Dr. Day would know about, to get the body feeling like the mind is choosing or recognizing. Even if you've got an abnormal, I don't know, what would it be, Tim, thyroid, or, you know, what might incite fear more easily?
Anything from the center of the brain, the limbic system.
Yeah, the limbic system fires off more so. Everybody's on a continuum. You have been on a continuum since you were a child. And you've had more or less the ability to get excited. As you got older, it waned a little bit. I got a little slower. But your mind tries to make sense of how you feel. And depending on what you're willing to think, the body will follow. Let me give you a simpler example that still applies to anxiety or anxiety attacks. If you're on the continuum where you have these anxiety attacks that seem to come out of nowhere, if you're on that continuum, this still applies because it's like getting a bee sting. You didn't ask for the bee sting. You got a bee sting. Or you stubbed your toe. You walk around without your shoes on again, and you stepped on a Lego. Oh, God, right? The pain shoots up your leg, and your mind is making sense and starting to think whether or not you've been cut or what have you. This is a simple experience of the body. But your mind will take it and judge it and decide if it's good or bad or if somebody shouldn't have allowed this to happen, including you. Depending on which way you go, whether you go toward anger, war, or to where you go, decide to go back to peace or stay in peace, this will dictate whether you suffer. Most of us have a habit of trying to blame somebody else for our pain. It's the way the ego works.
It's always about the future because of our nervous system doesn't get it to our brain right away.
That's right. That's right. And anything that you feel, the body is just waiting for you to decide what to do with it. Like a bee sting or a stub in your toe or any injury you have, if you're present, just say, this is an experience of the body, and let one breath out and say, oh, there goes all the energy around it. And you'll find the pain just drops off. I hurt myself all the time.
You're over.
I've had a lot of practice at this. Julie.
Just an interesting discussion because I'm not somebody that has suffered from anxiety in any formal sense. And I have been experiencing quite a bit of it as I am seeking to buy a home. And an interesting experience. First of all, I think I had almost like a panic attack for the first time in my life. And then what's interesting is that attack had come from thoughts, and that was really clear. But the lingering effect over several days was that I did no longer needed the thought. It was like this weight was just like hanging. I don't even know. Like I could just feel it and like dread. And, it was like, it's like, I'm not even actively thinking and yet the feeling's there, but it was like the thought didn't have to be there anymore because like the, it was like the sensation kind of created then its own, I guess you said judgment of it, but like for me, it's like, oh, this feeling's back and I can do nothing about it. So the helplessness would just set in. But I knew, even though I had those feelings or thoughts, like I also knew that I was doing this to myself because like of my training. And I couldn't shake it necessarily in those moments, but like I've been able to hold on to that. Like, and when I rebound, then it's like, okay, remember, this is me. These are my thoughts. So anyway, I appreciate the question, Don.
Excellent. Excellent. Good. It's helpful also if you have the wherewithal to make a comment about your anxiety or about your worry about the whole issue with buying a house or, you know, any negative thought that you may have about your, you know, legal situation or your health situation or your money situation. You can call out. You can call out your ego in that moment.
How do you do that?
You say, this is my ego. You see, yeah. In order for you to say that, you must not be the ego.
I think it'd be kind of cool to name the ego, to invent a name for my ego.
Some people in this group have.
Oh, really? I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that, and it's not going to be a nice name.
Call it the Don character.
The book will call you out.
What?
The book
will call you out.
Oh, man, sister.
And, you know, I have a lot of anxiety. I mean, not just about my current situation, but I have had a lot of anxiety in my life. I have driven myself to the hospital because I thought I was having a heart attack on more than one occasion, and they're panic attacks. So I know anxiety, and this book has really helped me get a grip on it in many ways in the middle of a difficult situation, which is the divorce that I keep mentioning. And keeps receding into the background because the book is stepping forward and really helping me with the anxiety. And I think I mentioned last week that though I'm having an easier time during the day, the ego attacks at night.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had this last week another example of that where I woke up from the other dream and was just full of fear and anxiety, non-specific. And so I told you I'm reading the book early in the morning. I went to the section that I'm reading in the text and it did it again. It basically said, get a friggin' grip. You know, you've come too far. In this process, this is chapter 16, you've come too far. You aren't going back. We're going forward and without fear, you know, and it just nails it every time. So I would suggest going to the book and pretty much anywhere.
Anywhere.
It deals with the same issue, ego or love, forgiveness, you know.
It also has a very, very loving voice.
It does.
The book does.
Even
when it's being harsh.
Yes. Even when it's stern.
So I would say you should read it out loud. If you're really in a bad way, take the book someplace where you don't mind, you know, won't disturb anybody else, you won't be nervous, and read the darn thing out loud. You will read the book, it will come out of your mouth, but it will go into your ears. It will fill the space wherever you are, you go in your car in the garage, if that's where you have to go, or the closet or the office. And when you read the book, it becomes bigger and it surrounds you and kind of hugs you a bit.
And can I just say, yes. Jason, I would recommend that for you, because when you speak of those things, I identify with what you say. And as a matter of fact, I have come across your name in this book. Remember, we have that ancient connection? Somehow I've written your name in this book from one of the former times that I have studied the course. So anyway, to me, I identify with what you're saying about the anxiety. Go to the book.
Yes. Boy, it's right there. It's printed. You got it in your lap. You can get it online. There's no excuse not to just lean on the book to pull you out of the darkness. Darkness is not your home. You're too tired to stay there.
Wait, there's a bar down the street called The Book. Go there?
Every Thursday night, we open one right here. I'm the bartender.
I was reading that Bill Tedford, in his La Jolla days, he would get together and they would sing the text.
Did they really?
Yeah, and they just start singing. That sounds like a nice interpretation, because you're going to hear it differently, but you're going to hear it. And maybe you need to hear it differently in a different context to get other messages.
Yeah, music, nice.
Music is our basic form of communication back in the day before speech. So music will put you there really quickly.
Nice.
Well, I've always found that as soon as I start feeling bad, I say, well, there goes my ego again, and it kind of goes away.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, back to page 443. 443, paragraph 7, calling out. He's just saying, you know, if you just want me to tell you, here's what's up. This judgment thing where you make a decision, you make a decision whether something is evil or sinful, not worthy of you and opposed to you, that's a toy. A whim. Really putting it low level here. The senseless means to play with the idle. Right? You know, idle means? Idle means not active, not effective, not connected. Idle game. A game is something you do that is like play, practice, goofing around. It's not real life, a game. It's designed to challenge you. It's designed to have you interact, a game. But a game is not real life, right? That's what we call a game. Look how redundant he is in this first sentence. Really laying it out from his perspective. And what is the name of the game that he put on your experience here? The game of death. Sometimes he likes to make the point with the more extreme words. Death and murder. He uses those to get your attention. Elsewhere he says, look, any loss that you can conceive of is death. If you're actually an extension of God, completely free, if you remain completely free as God created you, any type of loss at all is a level of illusion and is the same level as death. Whoa.
Say that again.
Any loss at all, from hangnail to nuclear war, to cancer, to death of a pet or a child, or money, or health, or marriage, any loss at all is a death. It's the same to Jesus, to the part of your mind that wrote this book, the part of your mind that's fully awake to what's going on here. I call that Jesus. It's just a shorthand. to that perspective, any loss is death. We think death is the big loss. He says, what? No, you don't. See, you're dreaming that you're a body and something that can lose. You've lost sight that you are an extension of the source and you have everything all the time. He knows this. He says, but I know you don't know this. I know you've intentionally forgotten this. So we'll get right back to the normal level of practical teaching in just a paragraph. But for now, he goes on and he says, sentence three, he says, look, what if you recognize that this whole world is a hallucination? What if you really understood that you made it up? I hope you feel a little butterfly of freedom in your gut as we read this, because this is printed in your book. It's offered to you. You can take it to task and look for your freedom here, as you can at any sentence in this book. What if you realize that those whom seem to walk about, right, proving that they're alive, what if you realize that those who seem to walk about in this world to sin and then to die, attack and murder, and destroy themselves, are wholly unreal? What if you just realized that? What would that feel like? That you recognize that attack and murder and death were all the same. And dream were all the same. And they were all like a movie, which seems real enough, but it's not true. And you are actually completely free of it because it's a hallucination that you've chosen. And as we just read last week, you can give it up as easily as you made it up, and you will.
So, Andrew.
Yeah.
This is a query. So, I'm putting it out there because, I think I need to clarification. So I have a friend, I haven't seen this woman in a long, long, long time, but sometime after we were well acquainted, her son, and she was in this kind of, she was in Course in Miracles. This is LifeSpring back, you know, decades ago when I was in that, and she was one of the trainers, and she had a son who was killed in a traffic accident. Okay, so, and I have some tragedy that I could refer to, but I'm going, okay, and I believe what you're saying, but at the same time, I'm saying, okay, I'm wondering, this woman's Kelly. So Kelly, knowing she made it up, and her son is dead. I just, wow. How's that? Because I have something, not a death, but it's something similar. And it's definitely in.
Don, you have a choice. And, okay. and you know, this is all about, what's her name?
Kelly.
This is about you, Don, not about Kelly.
Yes.
Always. Even if Kelly was right in front of you.
Yes.
Okay. The most important thing to recognize here is that you have a choice. It's not a multifactorial choice. It's either one or the other. Either there is something we would call God that is true and complete and gives and only gives like an eternal fountain of energy.
Only happiness.
Only happiness. Empowering you eternally with goodness, either that's true or that's not existent and you are left to the whim of suffering and dying, and the tragedy of the dead son will be followed by another death could be today. So you may as well just quit.
No, I believe it. I believe it.
There isn't anything in between, Don. There's no neutral. You can't sit idle and say, I'll just wait to find out which is true. That means you've already chosen.
Well, no, I'm looking backwards. And so, and I did choose.
Yeah. So either what the course,
I choose.
What the course says, and more than any other phrase in the entire book, is I am not a body. I am free. Why? Because I'm still as God created me.
Okay.
Either that's true, and you actually are free, and you're dreaming, which it says throughout the book, or your ego is true, the devil is true, God is powerless to hate and attack and death. Whatever God is, he's not that strong. And he loves death, and you don't want to meet him. And you never will. And we're going to read that tonight, which we have just enough time. We'll get to a section tonight where it says either you accept the truth or you will remain without hope. Since you're so powerful, being an extension of God yourself, nothing is going to get in your way. If you want to be miserable for another lifetime or 10, there's no harm to truth for you doing that. You can revel in that as long as you like.
I don't want to.
I don't think so. I don't think you do.
I declare.
Good. Declare.
I am not a body. I am free.
Yes.
God made me.
Declare your freedom. Yes, Barbara.
The whole book is about two frames.
Mm-hmm.
The ego frame or the course frame.
Atta girl.
And that it's all about undoing the conditioned mind that we are that ego that experiences death and destruction and murder and everything that we see in the world that we construct every day. We've accepted that frame. And if I can make a Buddhist reference, it just referred to it here, rebirth too. We don't know how many lifetimes we've been constructing this egoic frame. So undoing it ain't gonna be short. So the fact that we default all the time to that ego perspective is not to be surprised by. And that's why I say, just go back to the book, because it's helping, every word is helping you undo that conditioned ego mind.
We're going to take one more detour because of what Barbara said, and then we'll get back to our paragraph. Turn to page 251. I'm going to support what Barbara said. Another little, this word rebirth is quite a powerful word. I had a spiritual awakening on it myself, starting with Miracle Principle 13. That's one word. Said, oh, of course.
Where is that?
We're going to page 251, 251 in the text, which is chapter 13, section 6, called Finding the Present. You got to love that title.
What I believe is we are directed in every lifetime to learn something that brings us closer to knowing what we really are.
Well, that's true, because you have a gravity to truth, because it's what you are. You have a gravity to love because it's what you actually are. And so even in your game playing of avoiding love, your gravity is back toward love. Always and forever. Don't worry. Always and forever.
Chapter 13, The Guiltless Son of God.
It's called Finding the Present, Section 6.
Oh, 6. Okay.
And we're going to paragraph 3. It's very specific. Sundari. Oh, wait, let me get your mute. Hang on a second. It's a race. I got it.
Well, we were talking about judgment and death before, and for me, judgment is exactly time. Exactly. 100% equal. And so, and in the now, and what I've come to in the moment is that for me, now and Holy Spirit, it took me a while to get there, are 100% identical. So if I'm now intermingled as and together and joined and with Holy Spirit, there's no death. And
death takes time.
So all past, present, futures are what I'm creating in the now in my mind, in because there is nothing else.
And if you didn't take it so seriously, it would be all fun.
There is no rebirth other than there's these multiple storylines that I'm creating in simultaneity and living all of them with all the people that I'm, you know, creating to live them with right here, right now.
That's right. And you're free to do that as long as you like, in any direction you like.
Right.
You've been, yeah, and most of us have been fascinated by things like guilt, things like fear, things like death. We've been fascinated with them, kind of like watching a train wreck or a car crash. On the side of the highway, you know, it's so easy for you to look away. It's been a fascination. We've just taken it too seriously. Look at page 251, paragraph 3. This is for what Barbara said. I just want her to see and everybody to see. Sentence 5. I love this sentence. It says, to be born again is to let the past go and look without condemnation upon the present. You step out of time, and then you're new. Let the past go, and you are born again. There's nothing to judge if you let the past go. You can just
be every single moment, though.
Only do it every single moment, yeah. As long as there are moments. Yeah, don't give up on that.
As soon as you go back and go, oh, I'm not ready yet because I judged just 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Now you're in the past dwelling on your past performance in terms of the standard of A Course in Miracles. Because
like any good addict.
I'm not capable of judging, and yet I just judged. So guess what you're doing right there?
Yeah. Don't underestimate the ego. It will try to draw you back into time with every, until it doesn't. Just like any addiction, the drug will be more powerful than you until it isn't. And when I say addiction, I mean things like fear, like guilt, as well as, I don't know, cigarettes or heroin or alcohol or sugar.
And I think our ego is so strong that if we find fear easily, it just uses enough to do that. If we don't find fear easily, we find it really hard to be fearful, then it's going to use something really difficult to get us there.
I'm just saying, if you're able to step out of fear during a fearful situation and say, wow, why am I not afraid?
Yeah. Wow.
You just bust the ego. And you say, well, God, maybe I'm making it up every single time. That's what the book is talking about. So let's just quickly, I'll try not to interrupt. Let's have Barbara, I got your mute, Barbara, read for us paragraph 8 on 443, just for completeness. This is a wonderful paragraph.
Okay. Hallucinations disappear when they are recognized for what they are. This is the healing and the remedy. Believe them not, and they are gone. All you need to do is recognize that you did this. Once you accept this simple fact, and take unto yourself the power you gave them.
And you should underline you and underline them so you can really punch that sentence and make it personal. The power you gave them.
Okay. Should I start at 5 again? Once you accept this simple fact and take upon yourself the power you gave them, you are released from them. One thing is sure. Hallucinations serve a purpose, and when that purpose is no longer held, they disappear. Therefore,
they are not random. Hallucinations are not random. There are no neutral thoughts. There are no neutral dreams. Please continue.
Therefore, the question is never, therefore, the question never is whether you want them, but always do you want the purpose that they serve? This world seems to hold out many purposes, each different and with different values, yet they are all the same. Again, there is no order, only a seeming hierarchy of values.
There we go, seeming hierarchy of values. And then Barbara, just for completion, read just one more sentence from paragraph 9.
Only two purposes are possible, and one is sin, the other holiness.
And there's nothing in between, there's no neutral. So this is what's going on with you. If you are feeling unhappy about any circumstance, you have not chosen holiness with your mind. You have used your mind to choose separation, and you're playing. Like he says in the previous paragraph, you're playing.
So if you wake up like with a panic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there. It's like it's all, you're just like in a panic.
Yep.
Like a dream, right?
Yep.
And it is a dream. Okay, how can I then, because I do this, how can I then approach this in a happy way, a good way, a miraculous way? What can I say?
Sit up like a bolt. Sit up like a bolt and call your body to perfect attention. And say, this is my ego. I am not this. I recognize this pattern. I recognize this addiction. I am not this. Take a few deep breaths, giving your body a chance to calm down because you got chemicals shot into it. And watch the body calm down.
And be gentle on yourself.
What's that?
Be gentle.
Yeah.
On yourself, because the ego is highly practiced and it will attack. And so you're doing the best you can by doing this course and undoing to the best of your ability, little by little by little.
Yeah, but you do have to call it out.
Definitely.
Even through the tears or through the sweat. And through the discomfort, you call it out and say, Holy Spirit, help me see that this is just the ego and I'm not this body. And even just that thought, you begin to peel yourself off of being the victim and being inside the problem. Now you're watching the problem.
And I could say, I did make it up. I made you up.
Yeah.
I can unmake you.
Yeah. Okay, everybody, turn to page 448. 448. And we just want to read those italics before we jump into where I want us to go tonight. And Don, this is chapter 21, section 2, the responsibility for sight.
Okay. I'm going to have to get the book. Chapter.
Chapter 21, section 2.
Okay.
Get the book on Amazon. You can get it off my website. I got the best price going.
Chapter 21, section 2?
Yep. the responsibility for sight. Just read those italics for us.
We have, this starts with we have.
Yeah, go to paragraph 2.
I got it.
And then go into the italics.
I don't see italics, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Tim, would you read for us the italics on that page and then finish the paragraph?
Sure. I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience, and I decide upon the goal I would achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. Deceive yourself no longer that you are helpless in the face of what is done to you. Acknowledge but that you have been mistaken, and all effects of your mistakes will disappear.
And read us one more sentence from the next paragraph.
It is impossible the Son of God be merely driven by events outside of him.
Period. End of teaching. Wow. That's the message, and there's several levels at which you can read that, and it would be helpful to you. But one of them is pretty darn high and pretty darn conclusive and pretty comforting. Deceive yourself no longer. He's calling you out and saying you do have the ability to stop your suffering and take responsibility for what you see and you think and you feel. Now, let us jump to page 374 in the workbook. This is lesson 196, Dawn. Go to page, in the bottom of the page, it says 374. And with what time we have left, we're going to dig into this particular teaching that supports everything we've been describing.
Lesson 196?
Yes, sir. Are you there?
I am there.
Start the first paragraph for us, please.
It can be but myself I crucify. When this is firmly understood and kept in full awareness, you will not attempt to harm yourself, nor make your body slave to vengeance. You will not attack yourself, and you will realize that to attack another is but to attack yourself. You will be free of the insane belief that to attack a brother, you will be free of the insane belief that to attack a brother saves yourself.
Yep.
And you will understand his safety is your own.
Yes.
And in his healing, you are healed.
You see that title? It can be but myself I crucify.
Yes.
When you see the word but in A Course in Miracles, you can put in the word only.
Yes.
It can only be myself I crucify. Ross, I got your mute. Would you read for us paragraph 2?
Perhaps at first you will not understand how mercy, limitless and with all things held in its sure protection, can be found in the idea we practice for today. It may, in fact, appear to be a sign that punishment can never be escaped because the ego, under what it sees as threat, is quick to cite the truth to save its lies. Yet must it fail to understand the truth it uses thus. But you can learn to see these foolish applications and deny the meaning they appear to have.
You see what he just read? He said that if you follow the ego looking at your life, you're going to see facts. If you follow the facts, you're like a lawyer or like a court, and you'll see reason for loss and attack and so forth, and that there's no escape. If it's only you who punishes, suffer is the only way. But do you see what he's calling out here? He's saying if you use this way of looking at the world, What he's pointing at is vision is your alternative. He says in sentence four, but that it's like a record scratch. Stop. I'm about to tell you what you need to hear. But you can learn to see these foolish applications. Foolish analytics. And deny the meaning they appear to have. Now, you still have money issues. You've got relationship issues. You've got health issues. Your heart's going to beat approximately 1.5 billion times from the time you were born to the time you die. Roughly, nobody gets out of that. Even Jesus died, his body. Everybody dies. So he must not be talking about murder, suicide, marriage, taxes, right? He's talking about you, how you're actually living in your mind. You wake up by going in, not by going out. We do not make a better world. You make a better mind, and you find by turning exactly 180 degrees around that the door that you've been trying to go through is the exact opposite direction. The exact opposite direction from what the world has been teaching. Please, let's have Deborah, would you unmute yourself and read us paragraph three? And here it comes, folks, Course in Miracles. This is what we're doing.
I'm a little lost. Can you tell me where we are?
Yes, we're on workbook page 374. Workbook page 374. Paragraph three.
Yeah.
She's going to start out by telling you in a single sentence what we are doing. What is our devotion? What is our correction? What is it the workbook lessons would reward you with? Here it comes. Deborah, you ready?
Okay, with thus do you?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thus do you also teach your mind that you are not an ego. For the ways in which the ego would distort the truth will not deceive you longer. You will not believe you are a body to be crucified. And you will see within today's idea the light of resurrection, looking past all thoughts of crucifixion and of death to thoughts of liberation and of life.
If you use vision, if you turn to the Holy Spirit part of your mind, this means freedom. The idea that it could only be yourself that you crucify with your harmful thoughts. When you see how that's absolutely true, it's a liberation. I'm going to remind you right now that your life, what you experience, is your next thought. That's what you're going to experience. So don't be looking anyplace else for any other experience. There's nobody that's going to save you. You don't need saving. You just need to quit your stinking thinking. Bust your ego. Start coming in. Don't try to fix the world outside. That'll take care of itself. Fix your world inside. That's where your issues are. That's where your discomfort is, if you had any. And that's also where your joy is waiting for you. So watch that thought.
To me, that paragraph just says what I've been saying is that this has to do with the Ross character. And he is a character in the dream, just as Andrew, Luann, Jacqueline, Barbara, they're all just characters in the dream that I'm dreaming. So if I come at it with that perspective, I can easily forgive what I said before, which is the Ross character is having all these judgment. Oh, that person's too fat. That person's too skinny. Well, that's just the Ross character. It's going to continue to do that. But if I don't identify with the Ross character who will not believe that I'm a body to be crucified, then okay, let it do whatever it wants. You know,
that's it, Ross. The course is a sentence where it says, There is one proper use for separation, comma, that you are not your ego.
Right.
Just like he's saying. Good, good, good.
Story.
Anything you want to read for us? I got your mute. Read for us paragraph 4. Jason, you good?
Oh, I'm here. What do you want me to do?
Read paragraph 4.
Okay. Today's idea is one step we take in leading us from bondage to the state of perfect freedom. Let us take this step today that we may quickly go the way salvation shows us, taking every step in its appointed sequence. As the mind relinquishes its burdens one by one. It is not time we need for this.
It's not time we need for this. Come on, man. He's calling you out. He's saying, don't wait. We're going inward, and you're going to make the journey. It's a journey without distance, so it's not very far. And it's going to be you who takes the first and the last step, and you'll do it instantaneously. Please continue.
Okay. It is not time we need for this. It is but willingness. For what would seem to need 1,000 years can easily be done in just one instant by the grace of God.
That's the purpose of my meditation for you, to be able to try to allow, just put down all your thinking for a second. And find out, what if I really am free? And if so, I'm here. And there you are. Julie, would you read for us paragraph 5?
Apologies. I'm also not sure that I'm in the right place.
Oh, yeah. Workbook, page 374.
Oh, okay. Paragraph 5.
Yeah.
The dreary, hopeless thought that you can make attacks on others and escape yourself has nailed you to the cross. Perhaps it seemed to be salvation, yet it merely stood for the belief the fear of God is real.
Now, you see what she's saying here? She's talking about, Jesus is talking about the ego maneuver that you thought, and it did feel good, didn't it? When you blamed it on somebody else and you said, man, they really made my life difficult. Boy, are they bad. I'm sure glad I'm not that bad. Attack, attack, attack. This felt good to the ego, but it's been you were crucifying the whole time. It's exactly the opposite of what the ego thinks. That's what she's reading right now. Tell us more, Julie.
And what is that but hell? Who could believe his father is his deadly enemy?
Now, why is God pulled into it? Why was God called out? Because you think God is a person just like you, and that your father created you and then decided your life along the way. And that if attack is real, then it's God that's been doing some attacking too, and you'll never win that war. So you have to blame God. If you think that attack is possible at all, then you're including God too, and your brother and yourself. But you see, you will never, ever allow yourself to meet your father, your source, your own true self, if you believe attack is real. You will not allow it. Please continue so we get to this next couple sentences.
Who could believe his father is his deadly enemy, separate from him, and waiting to destroy his life and blot him out from the universe, without the fear of hell upon his heart?
Man, if this wasn't so personal, it would be funny. Donna, are you there? Can you read number 6 for us?
Yes. Let's see. Okay.
Okay, now, Madonna's about to read is paragraph 6 on page 374, includes some fine print in A Course in Miracles. There are no wasted words in this book. It really does mean what it says, and some of these truths are a bit harsh. But you know what? The sooner we get to the details like this and take the book seriously, the sooner you'll be free and fully happy. Donna, please read paragraph 6.
Such is the form of madness you believe. If you accept the fearful thought, you can attack another and be free yourself. Until this form is changed, there is no hope.
Period. That's not wasted words. That's just a simple comment of you blocking the awareness of love's presence perfectly. Of course, there's no hope as long as you do not allow love to return. And if you think that attacking another is not an attack on yourself, that it actually goes out and damages something out there, there's, you know, with nothing we could do for you. You're in the world and the land of separation. You're totally back in the bar drinking. Come back when you're ready to give up the bottle. That's what he's saying. Please continue.
Until you see that this, at least, must be entirely impossible, how could there be escape? The fear of God is real to anyone who thinks this thought is true. And he will not perceive its foolishness or even see that it is there, so that it would be possible to question it.
Isn't this a great book? Isn't this a particular point in your spiritual journey? I've never seen it anywhere. I've never seen anything describe, anything I've read or satsangs or anything else, describe the particular practical thought process of what my ego's up to. And like any addiction, all you have to do is see it and be honest and get out of denial that this thing has power. Ross.
I was driving along and I saw two bumper stickers on this car. One was hashtag support our children. And right under it, it said, kill your local pedophile. And, you know, my first reaction was, oh, my God, that person's terrible. And I thought, well, wait a minute. That's attacking them for their beliefs. Yeah. But their beliefs are that attacking. And so I was doing this whole circular thing going, wow, I just can't have any reaction to that at all, because that's just messed up.
Yeah, the bumper sticker in Santa Cruz, it says, hate the haters. But then you're hating the...
Yeah.
So where I am right now about that is I can criticize somebody, but within a few seconds I realize I don't feel good about having done it.
You didn't feel good.
Right.
That's your certain measure.
Even the person that has the, you know, support your local children, kill your local pedophile.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's get one more paragraph. Let's get one more paragraph out of this. Judy, are you there? I got your mute. Are you there? You want to read for us paragraph 7?
I'm here, but I'd rather not.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Marion, can we hear from you? Are you there, Marion?
I am.
All right. Paragraph 7 on page 375 in the workbook, please.
Got it. To question it all, it's for... first be changed at least as much as will permit fear of retaliation to abate and the responsibility return to some extent to you. From there, you can at least consider if you want to this painful path. Until this shift has been accomplished, you cannot perceive but your thoughts that bring you fear, and your deliverance depends on you.
Wow, thank you very much. Thank you, A Course in Miracles, for being so consistent. Thank you, A Course in Miracles, for telling us exactly what has to happen for me to be free around my attack thoughts. It's printed right there in paragraph 7 as a clean instruction. You can meditate on it. You can practice it. But I'll tell you, if you're ever still suffering over attack, there's why. And he's saying, look, just start working it until you can start to accept the responsibility for this energy and what you're putting out, you're getting as you put it out. Until you see this, you will continue trying to feed off of the ego's promise that you can attack somebody out there and not attack yourself. And hope is impossible for you as long as you're idolizing separation like that. And Luann called it out. She says, you know what? Even when I do it, I actually feel lousy. She's losing her motivation to judge and attack people. It doesn't mean she's going to go support them, but she's going to deny this idea that attack is worth anything.
I feel relaxed that nobody is guilty. If I'm not guilty, then nobody's guilty. And we can talk, you know, and then you get down into real life. But the point is, you know, the Course is saying nobody's guilty or God would be a monster.
Bingo. Bingo, Barbara. Follow that all the way home.
This and is there's relaxation in that.
Beautiful. There should be. There should be huge relief. It's a dream of guilt, but nobody's actually guilty with oneness. It like the Buddhist call, and I like so much, it says, a knife as sharp as it could possibly be cannot cut itself.
Right.
Rest in the simplicity of salvation. Rest in the simplicity of salvation. Allow the responsibility for your experiences to come back to you. And remember that you will only be experiencing your next thought. So choose wisely and live your whole life in the present moment that way. Thank you. Thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me. This was a difficult section, but we covered it really well.